and good evening, everyone. And my name is Bhikkhuni Seri. I'm a resident nun from Patachara Bhikkhuni Hermitage. My teacher is Ajahn Vayama. I entered into the monastic training as Anagarika in 2002 and ordained as a 10-precept nun in July 2004. And I received my full ordination as Bhikkhuni in October 2009. In 2 days' time, that's the anniversary, 22nd of October. And tonight, I would like to explore the concept of spiritual warrior. When we hear the word warrior, we think of a fighter, a brave combatant, a person distinguished or experienced in fighting in an armed force, tribe, etc. The concept of spiritual warrior resonates with me. To me, a spiritual warrior is a distinguished fighter on the spiritual path. They are not fighting on the killing field to harm. I associate spiritual warriors with qualities such as courage, determination, truthfulness, harmlessness, renunciation, integrity, wisdom, compassion, loving kindness, and peace. Spiritual warriors practice for liberation and freedom. As a Buddhist nun, a bhikkhuni, I consider the Buddha as an ideal role model of a distinguished spiritual warrior who attained liberation and freedom. And the Buddha also led and taught his disciples for liberation and freedom. The Buddha was born into the Sakyan clan, the Katiya, the warrior caste in India, 2,500 years ago. The Buddha was not just from the warrior caste. He was a prince with power and great fortune. But the Buddha renounced his fortune to seek wisdom and liberation. And in the Pabuja Sutta, the Going Forth Sutta in the Sutta Nipata, it describes the encounter between the Buddha-to-be, the ascetic Gautama, and King Bimbisara, the king of Magadha in India. King Bimbisara was impressed by the behavior and conduct of the Buddha to be when he saw him when on his arms. So the King Bimbisara went to find out where the Buddha to be lived and when to see him. And King Bimbisara said to the Buddha, this is from the Sutta Nipata, you have the good looks of a man, of high-born warrior, noble stock, 1 foot to grace a first-rate army, to lead the troops of elephants. I offer you a fortune. Take it. Your birth I ask you also. Tell it. The Buddha replied, There is a prosperous country, sire, and vigorous, right up against the foothills of Himalaya, inhabited by the Kosalans, whose race is named after the sun, whose lineage is Sakyan. But I have not gone forth to seek sense pleasures. I have gone out to strive, seeing danger in them and seeing safe refuge from them in renouncing. That is my heart's desire. The Buddha was clear and resolute in his quest for liberation. Even though King Bimbisara tempted him with great wealth and fortune and the power to be the head of his armed forces, the Buddha was immovable. He found refuge in renunciation and determined to practice for liberation and freedom. I love the Jataka stories that describes the battle between the Buddha-to-be, the ascetic Gotama, before he attained Nibbana, and Mara, the good old Mara, the tempter, the obstructor. Mara went with his large force to make a great effort and display much power against the Buddha, who was just meditating and contemplating quietly by himself. The Buddha had no one there to protect him. The only thing he could do was to use his practice to shield himself and to use as a weapon of attack. Mara said to the Buddha to get up from his seat. The Buddha said to Mara, I have the right to this seat. I have been practicing the 10 paramis for many lifetimes. And for your information, the 10 paramis are generosity, morality, renunciation, resolution, wisdom, truthfulness, loving kindness, equanimity, energy, and patience. And the Buddha continued, Even though I have no living being here with me, but let this great and solid earth be my witness. Then the Buddha to be, pulling his right hand out from underneath the fold of his robe and stretch it out towards the earth, saying, Are you my witness? The Buddha, the great earth resounded with 100,000 or 100,000 echoes, as if to overwhelm the forces of Mara, and saying, I was your witness. All of us here, sitting here, inspired by the Buddha, aspiring to be spiritual warriors like the Buddha, aspiring to train and practice on the spiritual warrior path. But how do we train and practice as spiritual warriors? As a Buddhist, the spiritual warrior path is the Eightfold Path. And for your information, the Eightfold Path is right understanding, samadhi, right thought, samasankappa, right speech, samavacha, right bodily action, samakamanta, right livelihood, samajiva, right effort, samavayama, right mindfulness, samasati, and right concentration, samasamadhi. Tonight, we are here seizing the opportunity to meditate. We already planting these seeds. We are already taking this step to be spiritual warrior. We are indeed following in the footsteps of the Buddha. Practicing as spiritual warriors does not mean that a spectacular display of fireworks or thunder and cheers. Practicing as spiritual warriors are like the strands that we weave into the fabric of day-to-day living. Weave wholeheartedly and patiently with care and love. It is like collecting water into the bucket of liberation, the bucket of Nibbana, drop by drop and moment by moment. And when we arrive and enter into this hall, we bow down to the Buddha. We already enter into the spiritual warrior path. Do not take this bowing lightly. When we bow, the bowing shows our and trains our humility. Bowing shows our respect and gratitude to the Buddha, the teacher who shows us the path. We bow three times, first of all to the Buddha, then to the Dhamma, the teaching of the Buddha, and to the Sangha, the community of those enlightened by practicing the spiritual warrior path. Traditionally, when we bow wholeheartedly, with our forehead touching the ground, both our hands and our elbows also touching the ground. I remember hearing a story from my teacher. She told the story of a nun who could not see the point of bowing. It's not me. She used bowing as yoga exercise. Eventually, with greater, this nun worked and saw the resistance in her own heart. And with greater understanding and connection with the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, she appreciated the beautiful gestures of bowing. When we come to a Buddhist center, we are looking for something to lead us to peace, lead us to liberation, lead us to freedom. We aspire to be spiritual warriors. We need to use the opportunity, any opportunity, to be awake and to look at the resistance as well as the openness in our heart. Bowing, even though a bowing is only a small gesture, when we bow, we are mindful and aware where we put our head, where we put our hands, and the movement of our body. We can use a small gesture and action to learn about ourselves, about our mind and our heart. I have an experience to share with you, and this shows you that I was not a born nun, and I have difficulties like some of you here, sitting cross-legged on the floor or bowing. I went to my first weekend retreat in Safety Bay with Ajahn Vayama in 1999. I was not able to sit for a long time cross-legged on the floor, so I stretched my legs out, not knowingly pointed my feet to Ajahn Vayama and the shrine. Just to relieve the pains and aches in my legs, Ajahn Vayama said to me, "The lady in red t-shirt, please do not point your feet to the teacher and the shrine out of respect to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha." I must say, I was really angry with Ajahn Vayama with that comment. In my mind, I was saying, who is she telling me not to point my feet? Doesn't she know that my feet are sore? Even though I was angry, and being someone that is stubborn, I decided to continue to stay on the retreat. And because I already paid for the retreat and already took time off work, but during the retreat, my mind was full of resistance. In the retreat, Ajahn Vayama conducted a walking meditation in a circle, and all of us were asked to walk according to the beads of her wooden fish to practice concentration with a bit of fun. Because my mind was full of resistance and being rebellious, I purposely walked slowly when Ajahn hit the wooden fish fast. And I purposely walked slowly purposely walked faster when Ajahn's speeds were slow. This created a lot of annoyance among other retreatants. I could see it on their face. One of the retreatants was the music teacher. She told me later she thought this lady had some serious problem. Even the year one student in her class could walk according to the beat. She did not realize that I was doing it purposely because I was being rebellious and my mind was full of resistance. I must say, at the time, I do not have the mindfulness to be aware of the resistance in my mind. I just acted out of my unskillfulness. This seemingly a harmless act of rebellion affected others on the retreat and caused them irritation and agitation. However, this particular incident must have left an imprint on my mind that sparked the urge for me to walk the spiritual warrior path later. When we aspired to be a spiritual warrior, we need to be aware, we need to be honest and aware of our feelings, actions, and reactions. We need to be awake and alert to our situation, whatever situation that we are in, and not to run away from life. And with the awareness and being awake, we can learn about ourselves and to lead us to peace and liberation. I have an experience to share with you, and this is a powerful moment that I experienced recently. I was at Bandart Cancer Center in Subiaco, which is next to St. John of God Hospital. I was just standing outside the toilet waiting for someone. Then, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a lady with her hand on a drip, who was weak and frail, walking past. I caught myself instinctively turning my head away. I turned my head away because I could not bear the pain and suffering that I was looking at. Most of all, I recognized this fear of pain and suffering in me, the fear that this could be me. I was shocked by my reaction. When I was aware of my fear, I make an effort, a gigantic effort, to turn my head around and to look one more time. I was standing there watching this lady, another fellow being on the path called life, called samsara. My heart melted and softened. I stood there sending her good wishes and loving kindness. May you be free from pain and suffering. May you be at peace and at ease. May you be free from pain and suffering. May you be at peace and at ease. It was a powerful moment for me because I was shocked to see the fear of suffering and pain in my heart, and surprised to see me turning away to avoid the pain and suffering. I was grateful for the training and practice that I have undertaken. The practice gave me the awareness, the willingness, the courage, and compassion to turn towards the pain and suffering. It allowed me at that moment to open my heart to the pain and suffering of the person in front of me, and to open my heart to my own pain and suffering. This experience reminded me of the Buddha's three considerations, or the threefold pride, as mentioned in Anguttara Nikaya, the numerical discourse. And this is the three considerations. When an untaught ordinary man who is subject to aging, not safe from aging, sees another who is aged, he is shocked, humiliated, and disgusted, for he forgets that he himself is no exception. But I too am subject to aging, not safe from aging. So it cannot befit me to be shocked, humiliated, and disgusted on seeing another who is aged. When an untaught ordinary man who is subject to sickness, not safe from sickness, sees another who is sick, he is shocked, humiliated, and disgusted, for he forgets that he himself is no exception. But I too am subject to sickness, not safe from sickness, and so it cannot befit me to be shocked, humiliated, and disgusted on seeing another who is sick. When an untaught ordinary man who is subject to death, not safe from death, sees another who is dead, he is shocked, humiliated, and disgusted on seeing another who is dead, for he forgets that he himself is no exception. But I too am subject to death, not safe from death, so it cannot befit me to be shocked, humiliated, and disgusted on seeing another who is dead. This is the three considerations or contemplations of the Buddha. Most of us only want to see love, beauty, health, happiness, and success. We want everything to be nice and sweet, everything to be okay, because this means we are okay. We do not want to see or know old age, sickness, and death. Pain and suffering is always them, not us, and definitely not me. Old age, sickness, and death is always out there, not in here. The Dhamma, the teaching of the Buddha, gives the spiritual warriors the tools and the strength to awaken to life as it is. The Dhamma and the practice also gives us the skills to be at peace and at ease, to love and be compassionate to ourselves as well as to the beings around us. When we aspired to be spiritual warriors, following the footsteps of the Buddha and his disciples, we need to practice, we need to commit to practice and train on the Eightfold Path, not just one aspect of the path, but the whole package of morality, meditation and wisdom, sila, samadhi, panya. It is like training for the Olympics. We need to commit ourselves and we need to put in the work ourselves. No one can do it for us. Some of you might have heard of Sally Pearson, who won a gold medal in the 100-meter hurdles at the London Olympics this year, representing Australia. Sally, at the age of 13, was inspired by Cathy Freeman in the 2000 Sydney Olympics. Sally Pearson saw Cathy Freeman win a gold medal in the 400-meter race. If Sally Pearson only dreamt of being a gold medalist herself and did not put in the work, she would not be standing on the podium at the London Olympics. This is the same for the practice of spiritual warriors. Practicing and training on the spiritual warrior path, we are practicing and training for our well-being and happiness here and now in our daily life, not just at the Olympics. It is a marathon, not a sprint. We are practicing and training for our well-being and peace, and eventually this leads us to liberation and freedom. We all can be the Olympic gold medalists in the spiritual warriorship, because there is not just one winner, and it is not a competition on the spiritual warrior path. We all can walk together on the spiritual warrior path, helping each other, encouraging and inspiring each other along the path. I'm going to share with you some of the female role models of spiritual warriors. Being a nun, a Buddhist nun, a bhikkhuni myself, I'm interested in investigating the female spiritual warriors. These female spiritual warriors was born in India 2,500 years ago, where the society was strongly class and caste orientated and had fixed ideas and expectations of the roles of females. They are expected to be daughters, wives, mothers, grandmothers, or even servants, slaves, and prostitutes. These female spiritual warriors had the courage, determination, and confidence to break through the social constraints and limitations at that time to seek spiritual freedom and liberation themselves. Some of them were not only the seekers, they attained their goals. They attained Nibbana, liberation. To me, they are very inspiring. This is not the end of the story. The Buddha, in his radical gesture of compassion and wisdom, offered these female spiritual warriors recognition equivalent to the male spiritual warriors, the full admission to the Sangha as bhikkhunis. Because of these spiritual warriors, I have the great opportunity to follow their footsteps to be ordained as a bhikkhuni myself. So now I'm going to start with Venerable Bhikkhuni Sona. Venerable Bhikkhuni Sona, ordained late in life after bringing up 10 children. After she entered the Sangha, she practiced earnestly. She was recognized by the Buddha as foremost in efforts. Excuse me. Among the bhikkhunis, she worked hard during the day, and during the night, she would pass the night with sitting and walking meditation, taking minimal rest. In order to avoid calling attention to herself, Venerable Bhikkhuni Sona practiced in the darkness of the lower hall. She guided her steps by grabbing hold of the pillars, thereby ensuring she would not bump or stumble into the unseen objects. In this way, she quickly gathered her energy and momentum in the practice. She attained liberation, Nibbana. I was inspired by Venerable Bhikkhuni Sona of her determination and effort to practice for Nibbana. It reminded me the practice on the spiritual warrior path require persistent effort. I'm going to share with you now one of my favorite poems by Venerable Bhikkhuni Chitta, who came from a well-to-do family. She described her enlightenment experience on top of the Vulture's Peak in her old age. This is her poem. Though I am thin, sick, and lean on a stick, I have climbed up the Vulture's Peak. Rope thrown down, bold I turned over, leaned on a rock. Then great darkness open. I repeat, leaned on a rock, then great darkness open. I love this simple poem. This is extracted from The First Buddhist Women by Susan Murcott. Vulture's Peak was The Buddha's favorite retreat in Rajgir, and the Buddha gave many, the place that the Buddha gave many of his discourses. It is steep and hard to climb. You can sit here, close your eyes, and see Venerable Bhikkhuni Chitta climbing up Vulture's Peak, full of faith and determination to practice. She must have been climbing up there many times. This time, Venerable Bhikkhuni Chitta's breakthrough came with a simple and insignificant incident. Leaning on a rock, then great darkness opened. She attained liberation, Nibbana. The breakthrough, the transcendental moments on the spiritual warrior path is often the culmination of many small and unspectacular efforts. It requires courage and awareness to be awake. It requires commitment, patience, and persistent effort and training. I'm going to share with you one of my unspectacular moments of training. A few months ago, I found a tear in my rope. I have only one rope, so I need to put a patch to sew and put a patch onto my rope so that I could wear it again. But I'm not an expert in sewing machine. So I decided to sew by hand. I estimated it would take me probably about 2 to 3 hours. So I casually mentioned to Ajahn Vayama, I was going to do the sewing in the afternoon, and I was going to listen to Dharma talks at the same time while I was doing the sewing. I thought I would be bored sitting there sewing for 2 to 3 hours. And I did not want to waste my time by sitting there only doing the sewing. And I'm just being efficient, like most people was in their lives. But Ajahn Vayama turned around and said to me, being a monastic and training on the path, it would be better for me to train to do only one thing at a time. This gives the practitioner the opportunity to be fully present and wholeheartedly with whatever they are doing and whatever is in front of them. I tried to argue and reasoning in my usual rebellious way, and then walk away to do my work. I must say, I did stop to contemplate Ajahn Vayama's advice. I realized that I was following my usual conditioned habitual pattern to aim for the fastest, the most efficient, but not to practice, and not to go against the stream. I changed my mind. I sat there and sewed for 3 hours and paid full attention to sewing only. I used this opportunity to send a message and to make a statement to my mind and my heart of my commitment to practice for liberation and freedom. Ajahn Vayama never asked me afterwards what I did, But I knew in my heart, I have chosen the spiritual warrior path. I have put a strong imprint in my mind of my to practice for liberation and freedom. Now I'm going to finish this Dharma teaching or sharing of Dharma tonight with a poem from the poems of the early Buddhist nuns. This poem is by Venerable Bhikkhuni Sundari. To me, this is a significant poem. Venerable Bhikkhuni Sundari's father, Sujata, ordained as a monk after the death of his only son. Sundari was the only child left in the family. Her mother told Sundari she could inherit all the wealth of the family. Sundari, even though she was young, beautiful, with great inheritance and wealth, she chose renunciation and joined the Sangha to seek spiritual freedom. I'm going to share with you the last part of the poem when Venerable Bhikkhuni Sundari went to pay respect to the Buddha after she attained liberation, following the teaching and instructions of the Buddha. This is a significant poem because the Buddha recognized and confirmed the achievement of a female spiritual warrior, Arahat Bhikkhuni Sundari. This is her poem. I am your disciple, Sundari, and I have come from Kasi to pay homage, Buddha, teacher. I am your daughter, your true child, born of your mouth. My mind is free of clinging. My task is done. The Buddha replied, then welcome, welcome to you, great woman. The tame come this way to pay respect, pay homage to their teacher's feet, free of desires and its chains. Your mind is free of clinging. Your task is done. This is the poem by Arahat Bhikkhuni Sundari. I share this teaching with you. May the practice on the spiritual warrior path bring us happiness and peace. May the sharing of teaching tonight help us all on the path of practice for liberation and freedom. I would like to dedicate the merit of sharing of teaching tonight with a distinguished female warriors, spiritual warriors of our time, my teacher, Ajahn Vayama, for her 60th birthday next weekend. And may she be at peace and at ease. May she have well-being and may she attain her goal, liberation, freedom, Nibbana, in this very life. Thank you.